Hi, filmmakers. Jason Brubaker with Filmmaking Stuff, where we show you how to make, market, and sell your movie without the middleman. I'm talking to you from sunny Southern California, and I'd like to welcome you to the show. Today, we have a special guest. His name is Jack Kelly, and he's a writer and producer based here in Los Angeles. Recently, he released this awesome film called Solver. And Jack, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us about Solver. I know that this is a very interesting niche topic, and I'm sure our listeners would love to hear about how you came about the topic and what it took to get this thing made.
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime you're looking at making an indie film, you want to have some type of unique angle. And our concept was sort of the Goonies meets an escape room. So we're really drawing on that world of kind of puzzles, games, escape room, mystery adventure. And some analogs would be films like Da Vinci Code or National Treasure. But obviously on an indie scale, our movie is set in a small town.
Yeah, and you did some interesting things as well. You had this thing called the Solver Puzzle Hunt. And what was that in terms of, you know, I guess that was a marketing campaign that you guys were trying to execute that would help you spread word of mouth. How did that come about?
So the Solver Puzzle Hunt was actually one of my favorite parts of this whole process. So, you know, a few months back, we were sort of brainstorming, okay, how do we want to introduce Solver to the world? And while we were just sort of kicking around some ideas, we asked ourselves, okay, who's our core audience? And we knew our core audience is people who love escape rooms, people who love puzzles, people who like doing, you know, crosswords or things like that. And what we came up with was a partnership where I brought together a dozen sort of game, puzzle, and escape room companies to each design and contribute a unique puzzle that was related to the characters and the world of the film. And then over the course of about, you know, maybe 2 months, each week on our Instagram at Solver Film, we would introduce a new short little video clip with a puzzle associated with it that had been designed by one of these companies. So, you know, from a marketing standpoint, we were able to introduce the film to everybody who was interested in, say, one of these escape room companies, or everybody who, you know, was interested in, you know, somebody's puzzles or what it might be. So that was really constructive in terms of setting up the world, getting people into that kind of puzzle solving mindset. And, you know, we built up a couple thousand Instagram followers, all organic. We certainly didn't pay for any of those.
Right. And then, you know, what's interesting about that is there's a lot of people out there, filmmakers, especially if you go to these film festivals, where they're talking about this idea of you have to build an audience, you have to build an audience. And, you know, other people might or may not agree with that. But from your perspective, you were able to first and foremost identify an audience that would be interested in this type of material. And then you figured out where that audience congregated online. And then you were able to source them through those channels. Was that sort of your intention right from the beginning? I mean, you could have made a film about anything.
Yeah, that's a great point and a distinction that you bring up, because when we started out creating the film, escape rooms had not reached the same level of popularity as they have kind of attained today. So, you know, when we were brainstorming ideas for this 3 years ago, I had only just kind of heard about escape rooms. So in that sense, we got very lucky with the timing of a phenomenon that sort of supports the kind of world of our film. Obviously, there's been other movies like that in the past. I do think it's important. It's a little bit of a balancing act, right? Because on the one hand, I think there's a little bit of a danger, I guess, in saying, Pokemon's hot right now, so we got to make a movie about, like, lovable, you know, Japanese fighting characters. And 3 years from now, that may no longer be the case when your film is kind of finished and ready for distribution. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of both. On the one hand, you got to have a project that you really believe in and that has some interest or some base. But on the other hand, I think just a word of caution about just basing something on what's popular in a given moment is worth noting.
Yeah, and because you did your homework, you know, one of the interesting things I see working in distribution also is this. Often it's the films that don't necessarily need a worldwide distributor in order to get distribution. And because you've done your homework, it looks like a lot of distributors became interested in your content. But you did something interesting. You split up your rights in sort of what we would describe as a hybrid distribution deal. So can you talk a little bit more about, you know, your whole process in terms of deciding on the distributor and why you decided to go hybrid as opposed to just giving up your rights to one distributor that wanted everything?
Right. And that's it's a complex and thorny issue, as I know you're aware, and I'm sure your listeners are aware. For people who aren't completely aware, distribution is generally divided up in the sense of international and then domestic, which ironically also includes Canada, right? So the U.S. and Canada and then everything outside the U.S. and Canada. So oftentimes a distributor is going to want everything because it's just easier for them. They don't have to worry about, you know, the timing of somebody else putting the film out in the U.S. while they're trying to sell the film in China, or, you know, just extrapolate on that. But we were in a position where we looked at it like this. Were we going to go fly around the world to all the major film markets and try to sell the film? And if we did so, what was the likelihood anyone would listen to us or take our meetings? And we realized that the answer to the first question was no, and the question to the second, or the answer to the second question was low probability. So we realized that we needed an international sales agent, and we were able to get one because you know, we have quality film. But then for domestic, we realized that we wanted to hang on to and control that. And I was just having a conversation last night with two indie filmmakers who recently completed a horror film, and they're looking for advice about distribution. And I kind of said, look, you know, there's really no sure way to know exactly what's going to be the best route, because you might get a great worldwide distributor who does a fantastic job. They're totally honest in their reporting. They keep expenses tight, and you might wind up making money and more people see your film than they would have otherwise. On the flip side, the reality for domestic is that it's not very well known, but most of the money for independent film in the domestic market comes from transactional VOD. And what that is iTunes and Amazon or other platforms like Vimeo and Google Play and things like that. If you think about it, most indie films don't have a big theatrical run. And as everybody is aware, DVD is probably a shrinking market. And, you know, furthermore, indie films making a lot of money in an ancillary market like education or cruise ships and airlines and things like that, those odds are pretty low unless you have maybe a specific subject matter documentary, you know, about vacationing in Thailand and, you know, Thailand Airways wants to license your documentary.
Right. And then, you know, going back to what you were talking about with the transactional video on demand. So you did this word of mouth marketing with the Puzzle Hunt. And then were you able to kind of hit the switch and start driving that traffic towards your desired buy now button? And I believe it's iTunes is what you were focused on, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. You know, we had, actually listened to a podcast I think you did with a group, and I might be getting this wrong, called, I think they're called Range 15. And
oh, yeah.
That was a movie that they had, rather than try and go out to, you know, a dozen different platforms with the kind of shotgun approach, my recollection is they were more focused on maybe just one or two platforms, I think specifically iTunes. And I think the rationale behind that, and hopefully we'll be able to duplicate that in some fashion, is if you are getting lots of attention and notice on iTunes, that's obviously going to kind of boost you up in the rankings. And it's maybe a little bit better to, say, have 1,000 people buy your movie on iTunes than it is to have, you know, 80 people buy your movie on each of the different platforms that's out there, because you're able to focus and concentrate attention on that film. So when we kind of built up the whole Puzzle Hunt thing, we also did do a theatrical kind of like pre-release. So the month of January, we did do a bunch of sneak preview live theatrical screenings. We didn't treat it like a regular theatrical run. We treated them as kind of special sneak preview events. And we tried to have at least one member of our cast or crew or you know, myself there at the event to engage with our fans live. And we felt like that was really successful. We were selling out, you know, 300-seat auditoriums in the middle of snowstorms and stuff, because we were able to really focus our efforts. So from that standpoint, we had kind of two different things. We had kind of the sneak previews with the theatrical stuff. You know, we had kind of our PR marketing and kind of articles and things have been written about the film. And then we had sort of the Puzzle Hunt aspect. And then all that is kind of coming together now to kind of bring about awareness about the film on TVOD.
Yeah, and getting into TVOD, I was going to say TVOD, but TVOD as we abbreviate it, transactional video on demand. When you got into TVOD, similar to what you were talking about with the international sales agents, you kind of did the inverse. You decided to self-distribute. Was that a tough decision for you? And I know you worked with Distribber, and I'm sure all of our listeners know that I also work at Distribber, so in full disclosure, we're mentioning Distribber. But with that in mind, I know... you know, from some of our early conversations that you had some options on the table. So what ultimately led you towards self-distribution for domestic digital?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we had about 5 distribution offers, and some of them were from pretty reputable groups. And we actually went quite far down the road with one group, and we actually really liked those guys. But it really boiled down to economics and sort of control of the property. So when if you're an indie filmmaker, and again, I'm going to kind of back up a little for people who aren't overly familiar with this world, your goal is to distribute your film. You want people to see your film, and you want to make your money back so that you can make another film. Now, especially if you're a first-time filmmaker and you're unfamiliar with the process, basically, when a distributor comes in, all a distributor does is they're taking the film that you've created and they're going out to various distribution methods. So it could be theatrical, it could be VOD, it could be DVD, or it could be, you know, ancillary, right? Just to kind of cover the general ones. And they are essentially a middleman who is taking a product and getting it out to a consumer via platform, right? And when you have a film and you go to distribute this, you are effectively licensing the rights to the film to this distributor for a period of time with a certain deal, right? And that might be 2 years, it might be 15 years, it might be 25 years. And a lot of filmmakers, I think, are signing these deals and not realizing you are completely giving up all rights and control over your film when you sign that license agreement. So anything that you're not carving out of that agreement, you don't have the control over. So if you wanted to make a bunch of DVDs and give them out to your grandparents, if you signed away the rights to license and distribute DVDs, you can't do that. That would be illegal. And I'm using a little bit of a ridiculous example, but just sure. to kind of bring it back, when we were looking at this, my background is in among other things, finance. And so we kind of ran a sort of Excel models looking at, okay, how much additional sales would we need to make to net the same amount of money if we went with a distributor? And again, for your listeners, what typically happens in these distribution deals is, let's say that you make $100,000 gross sales. Your distributor is going to take anywhere from, 40 to 60% of that off the top, right? So then now you're left with, say, $40,000. And then you say, okay, great. Well, I still get $40,000. But before you see back a nickel, all the marketing and sales and kind of other costs are netted out. And if you didn't negotiate a cap on that, then that could completely eat up the remainder of the money. You only get what's left over. And there are some shady people out there who will foist off a portion of their overhead, which is their regular operating costs, into that sales and marketing number. There's all sorts of tricky accounting things. And then it's on you to then go and audit that distributor, which is a real pain. And then you may have inconclusive evidence. And by that time, who knows where you are in terms of the relationship and actually getting any money back. So just based on our experience in the indie film world, Jason, as you know, there's a lot of earnest people, but there's also some shady people. And we just didn't like a lot of the contracts, the terms that we were seeing, and we found a lot of distributors were not super willing to negotiate on them, probably because their attorney said, hey, don't negotiate on this stuff. So we chose to retain the domestic rights, and, we were looking at a couple different options, and we decided to go with Distribber, which essentially, for a flat fee, as I'm sure your listeners know, will be able to take your content, encode it, and get it up on various digital platforms. But, apart from some, I think, small administrative fees, essentially from that point on, every dollar that comes in comes back to the filmmaking company, right? So my company, which owns the rights to the film in perpetuity. So till the end of time, we hang on to the rights, and any marketing we do, we A, control those costs, and B, we're the direct beneficiaries. So that's a bit of a long-winded answer to your question, but that's why we chose to retain the rights. I will say that it requires a lot more work than just sort of handing something off to somebody and kind of hoping that they're going to do a good job with it. And the flip side is you get to maintain control over something you've spent years working on.
Well, as you can imagine, I've talked with a lot of filmmakers, and the interesting part about, had you gone with a traditional distribution deal for your domestic digital, by month number three, after the honeymoon period has ended, a lot of distributors have moved on to other content. So with filmmakers that I talk with, oftentimes what you find is you're still required to go out there and hustle if you want the film to be successful. But the kicker, as you brought up, is you're locked into a distribution deal for 5, 7, 25 years when you take the traditional route. So it's exciting to see this case study that you've created by being able to go out and identify that audience and control more of your film's destiny. Do you see, and what I'm so excited about, and I'm sure our listeners will agree, is, and we didn't go into this too much, but you just hit upon the fact that you come from a finance background. I mean, you were doing structured finance, which I don't even fully know what all of that is, in Wall Street, for a number of years. So it's fun to hear your outside perspective, try to digest the film industry. So knowing what you now know, where do you see you know, disruption, or where do you think the future of distribution's headed?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a complex subject, as I'm sure you're well aware, because there's kind of two competing factors. One is how much interest can independent filmmakers generate with their content in a world where Amazon and Netflix are generating so much of their own content, for example, and they have kind of built-in distribution and marketing. So, for example, if you want to do an indie action film, but Netflix is also doing indie action film with kind of unknown actors, but Netflix can basically just hit a switch and kind of have that pop up in the queue or wherever on Netflix so that people will see that. And it's very, you know, it's sort of path of least resistance. They might just click on it, start watching it. Whereas if you're the indie filmmaker, you have to kind of go this extra mile. And, you know, that's a challenge on the one hand. On the other hand, there are some fantastic creative people making really good indie films, and the challenge is getting eyeballs on those. And I think we're at an interesting point in time, and I've actually been having some conversations with some members of the kind of National Theater Owners Association, and they're mm-hmm. also kind of fed up with the current distribution model, because what you have is people creating products who are the indie filmmakers, and you have the audience who's your end user. And in the middle of that, you have this middleman, which is the distributor, and they are eating up all the profits. And a lot of independent theater owners don't like the deals that they're kind of forced to take. But if they don't take those deals, for example, with a distributor, they're not going to get the films that they need to show to keep their business running and keep the lights on. By way of example, I won't use names, but a certain very large sci-fi movie which recently came out, I talked to a couple indie theater owners, and they said, yeah, we're getting to keep 35 cents on the dollar when we sell a ticket. So if you know, the theater owners are kind of on the side of the indie filmmakers, I would say, because, you know, they'd much rather be doing a deal where they could keep, you know, 50, maybe 55% of tickets that they sell, because that margin makes a huge difference for somebody running an independent theater. So I would say they're on the side of the indie filmmakers. In terms of digital, I mean, that's the great leveler. So that's one of the reasons I like distributor. That's one of the reasons I like the path we've chosen to go, is once your film is up on those platforms, you have kind of just as good a shot as anybody else in terms of delivering the content to your audience. The question then becomes, what are you going to do for marketing? Because even a $10 million movie, which is not a big budget by Hollywood standards, is going to have a marketing budget that's probably bigger than most independent films, right? I mean, if they've got, you know, $750,000-$800,000 for marketing, I mean, that's more money than most indie filmmakers are spending on their films. So we have to remember that, you know, when people are kind of sitting around and saying, hey, I can't understand why, you know, I'm not getting views on this. Well, you got to remember just how much marketing dollars are being spent by these larger film concerns. And furthermore, as I mentioned, the Amazon and kind of Netflix have this kind of, built-in marketing network in their back pocket. So I think it's an interesting time for sure, but, you know, as a certain distributor who I will also have remained nameless confided to me, and this was an older guy who's been in the business like probably 40 years, he said the system is broken. And a lot of people realize the current system is unsustainable because the economics are not there for the filmmakers. So if you're taking all the risk, you put in all the effort, you made your film, and you're going to hand it off to somebody, and you know, you don't really know what's going to happen. At least from our perspective with Solver, we chose to take the additional risk, but also to, in the sense to hang on to the additional responsibility. And we just made a wager, hey, we don't think that bringing in a distributor is going to bring four times more eyeballs or five times more eyeballs to our film. You know, it's not going to change the quality of the film. And in terms of marketing and things like that, you know, we thought we came up with ideas that were fun and interesting and engaging, that would have, you know, basically, you know, more or less for free in terms of the work we put in. Whereas we would have had to pay a marketing agency or something like that if we'd been doing that through a distributor. So, you know, I'm not sure, to be totally frank, Jason, which direction we'll go. I just think it's a very interesting time right now. And, we're just going to have to kind of wait and see, you know, who ultimately wins the day.
Well, you know, the good news here is you have a film out there and it seems to be largely embraced by an audience that you'd pre-identified. You built the film full of all sorts of intricate puzzles and clues and mechanical design, which I'm sure was probably took you 20 years to figure all that stuff out. And now you have a target audience that is actually embracing the movie strongly. I know, you know, your time is so limited and I love everything that you're sharing today, but can you just talk a little bit about, you know, why your film is different than the gazillion other films that are out there and why that's so appealing to your audience?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, Solver from the get-go was designed as a high concept film on an indie budget. So we wanted to differentiate ourselves, and we feel that we've definitely done a good job with that by making it this kind of puzzle treasure hunt type movie. Again, in that sort of vein of Da Vinci Code, National Treasure, etc., we are excited that the escape room community has embraced the film as strongly as they have. We regularly get emails from escape rooms and so forth, people who run them or whatever, across the country, asking us where they can see the movie. Could they do a screening in their town and things like that? So we feel very lucky that audience has embraced Solver, and we do everything we can to try and be responsive to them and to encourage that interest. I will say without, you know, we may or may not currently be in discussion with a major international escape room company right now to potentially do a partnership with Solver. And that's something we never would have been able to do if we had gone with a traditional distributor in terms of controlling the terms of a deal like that or directly negotiating it. So, you know, we're excited that people really picked up that kind of puzzle solving aspect of the movie. So, I mean, on top of that, you know, it's a film with interesting and active characters. So you have that kind of emotional story on the one side that's working on one half of your brain. Then you have that kind of mystery logic, puzzle solving, trying to figure out, okay, what's this do? How's that fit in? You know, kind of working the other side of your brain at the same time. So we tried to create that kind of full experience. And I think that is, in a sense, a future of entertainment. I mean, the reason people love escape rooms is it's interactive. They get to go out. They get to figure it out. They're involved. Same thing with this film. You're not just watching the characters on screen and hoping that, you know, the guy's going to ask the girl out or whatever. You are with them step by step of the way, figuring things out, trying to understand how it fits together. And, you know, there's a large audience for that kind of thing. And I did a piece with Bloomberg News a month or two ago, and they called it the future of interactive entertainment. So we'll see if people in the broader audience embrace that. But certainly so far, we're really excited that anybody who loves an escape room, anyone who loves a mystery, anyone who loves a puzzle is really digging Solver.
Awesome. Well, on that note, where can we find Solver, especially for everybody who wants to watch it?
Right. iTunes, Amazon, and we're also on Vimeo On Demand. So we chose to focus on those kind of three platforms, and we are for sale right now. And if you follow our Instagram at Solver Film, there may or may not be fun little puzzles with discount codes and things coming down the line. So yeah, it's out there. Check it out. And we'd love to hear your feedback. Solvermovie.com is our website, and you can contact us on there. We would love to hear from you. And Jason, I just want to thank you for taking the time to have me on your show today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Well, on that note, as always, take action and make your movie now.